19 or had close contact with anyone known or suspected to have COVID-19 in the last 14 days. Are you or a member of your immediate household awaiting results from a COVID-19 test? And the final question, have you or a member of your immediate household in the last 14 days returned from a country designated by the CDC as a level 3 country or spent more than 24 hours in a state identified as having significant community spread? And then we give the links to that because those two things get updated with very frequent occurrence. You know, different states are being added to the list. Occasionally a state comes off the list, but it is very important that those that are asking these questions are checking those websites through those links to see what those states are. So that if anybody says, yeah, I just came back from this state 2 days ago and I was there for 3 days and that state is on the list, then the meeting has to be delayed for the 14 days. And then after the 14 days, they can try to reschedule the meeting by asking these safety protocol questions again. So we believe that with these protocols, when they're followed, we have done as much due diligence as is possible under this very dynamic situation to enable for close contact services to resume. So I will stop now and certainly entertain any questions or comments that anyone may have.
Yeah, this is Al. Sorry.
Yep.
I have several questions. I don't want you to identify an individual by name, but who is responsible for oversight of these conditions? Second of all, where are these records kept? Because they are public records, and somebody may ask to see them.
The vendors specifically are told in this document not to submit to us the actual questionnaires. Those questionnaires contain medical information, which is protected. We are not supposed to divulge the name of an individual who has reported COVID-19. That is protected. All we are asking the vendor to do is certify through their affirmation statement when they bill that these protocols have been followed. So they are contracted vendors obligated to follow contractual obligations and follow these protocols. So if there was a request of verification that a person X was asked the protocol and somebody wished to see it, because that is medical information is on that form, we are not going to be the recipients of that information. We will be the recipients of the bill with their statement certifying they follow the protocol, and that's, of course, what we retain.
So to whom does the contractor certify that they're following these protocols, and what's the recourse if we discover that they're not following said protocols?
They do certify to us. The invoices go to Chris, and then Chris and Margie review them, then Chris approves them and sends them off for payment. If Chris receives an invoice where they have not documented that the service protocols were followed, then Chris is going to contact that vendor and say to that vendor, I don't see your statement asserting this. And if they, in fact, didn't assert that they followed the protocols, because they didn't, then we could withhold payment. We could say, you did not follow these protocols, we won't pay. you violated your expected requirements. Now, keep in mind that these requirements just got issued in September. So this will be for bills that start reflecting September services, bills that are coming in October.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, is there anything you wish to contribute to this conversation?
No, I think you've covered it all, Brian.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. This is Hannah Tyler, Chair. So may we continue with service plan requests as the next discussion?
Chris, that would be you?
Yes. Hang on one second. Computer has gone to sleep here. Let's see. There we go. Okay. So the client service plan review committee, as we have historically called our subgroup, which is right now it's Al Sylvester and Kathy Morgan and me, Chris. We were received requests from two clients, actually from the Guardians, for two clients, and we reviewed these requests back actually in August initially, after the July meeting. And so I'm going to read the requests for their deafblind client proposals for two who will be identified by initials. The first is a New Haven resident, D.H. For D.H., his sister and guardian, Stephanie S., reports that D.H. is now spending more time in the family home in New Haven where he resides with his sister, Stephanie, her husband, and their two children. And this arrangement has been, so our client has been living with the family of his sister and guardian for the last several years following the death of their mother. And since the death of their mother, the Department of Developmental Services, DDS, has been providing financial support for DH to attend a day program while also funding direct care staff support in the home overnight throughout the week and on second shift on weekends, the second shift being about 3 until 11 p.m. When the coronavirus arrived, the Guardian withdrew DH from his crowded day program that DDS was funding his attendance at, out of concern for his health and safety. And they have been relying on, reduced one-to-one staffing that the day program budget had covered. They hire staff to help DH begin his day in the home. Thus, the client has been spending a lot more time in the family home at a time when the other family members are all working full-time from home, while those same family members are attempting to provide care for their two children with autism.
And so this client's guardian is looking for funding to hire an SSP to take DH out into the community during the day on outings like walking in the neighborhood, at a local track, at a nearby school, sometimes shopping for groceries or craft supplies at safe times throughout the day when those venues are less busy. They also hope that the SSP could find some way for DH to visit safely with friends, although, as Brian outlined just now, that protocol will be very difficult to bring about. But Stephanie had pointed out that all of these activities require the facilitation of communication, and so Stephanie would hire SSP staff who are familiar with the variant of American Sign Language with some home sign that DH uses. And the request is for 665 hours of services for the remainder of the state fiscal year at the rate of $15 an hour, for a total of $9,975. Obviously, that's pretty much the sum total of that proposal. I would like to entertain questions before I go on to the second proposal. Okay, if anyone does have questions, please just bring them, say occur to you as I'm describing the second one, feel free to come back to that. The second client is someone with the initials of JF, who is one of the current clients who is currently getting funding through the Deafblind Community Inclusion Grant. But they're asking for some additional funding, and I will describe the circumstances under which the JF's mother and guardian contacted us. So JF had for many years lived in his family's home in Cromwell, but for the last several years he's been living in a DDS-funded community living arrangement in a residential area in New Haven. The vendor, that is the mother and guardian, MS, had used these funds to hire a person who was comfortable and able to communicate with the client, and who was able to safely supervise, control, and accompany JS on his walks throughout the neighborhood. This enabled the client and the SSP to go out, take a walk when they found them, pick up recyclable cans and bottles. They had a routine that involved them dropping those, recycling or redeeming the cans for money, and then stopping for some drink and a snack, a beverage and a snack, before returning to the group home. Now the part of the problem is that the group home is prohibiting contact with persons who do not live in or work at the group home. The client's guardian herself is not able to visit, JS is really not getting out of the home for the vigorous physical exercise that really benefits him and that helps him, would help him better tolerate the confinement, that he is experiencing right now. The guardian had reached out to the vice president of community living services for DCRC, the operator of the group home, who is willing to offer extra hours to the employees of the group home when those employees are not on duty, and who are obviously persons who are familiar with JS, are permitted to come in to close physical contact with him, and who are able to communicate well with him. So these staff, group home staff, would be able to, on overtime, as it were, and using the funding through this grant, take JS out into the community and get him the necessary stimulation and exercise that he really benefits. I did speak with the Vice President of Community Living Services at the group home chain, along with Margie, and we verified all of this. The Guardian is requesting that the grant funding, which is currently in place for this fiscal year at $2,536, be increased to $5,236, which at the rate of $15 an hour for the staff who would be working on the weekends would enable JF to get out into the community for about 4 hours every weekend. And so those are the two requests. And obviously I think both of these requests come about due to the changes in the living situations and the way in which our two clients are now receiving services due to the coronavirus outbreak. So I'll entertain any questions on those if people have those. Okay, I hear no questions. Madam Chair, do you want to suggest that the committee vote on these two requests?
That sounds like a great idea. All right, may we
Hi, this is Al.
Oh,
I move your staff recommendation.
Yes, please.
Okay, move staff recommendation.
I second, Sandy.
Fabulous. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. This
aye.
Any against? Any abstaining? Very good. Then we will put forth those requests.
Thanks very much. This is Chris. This is Chris again. I have one more request that, as Margie and I, to a certain extent, have been reaching out to clients. Another client has come to our attention as somebody who would benefit from CAN SSP services, so the staff are asking if this client, whose initials are LB, could be added to the client list for CAN. I did not provide a summary of this. I think when this first came to our attention, we weren't fully aware that that the request, you know, should obviously properly go through the Deafblind Advisory Committee. But we have a longtime client who had attended Oak Hill, who had moved out of state, who had attended CIB, I think, the Connecticut Institute for the Blind, who had then moved out of state to Oklahoma for over 20 years and had returned some years ago, who is living in the greater Middletown area and uses a guide dog to get around in her community. But she's now living in an area without dependable bus service and is very anxious to see if she can, you know, continue to get out more into the community using SSP, excuse me, SSP services. I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone may have about clients, but this is someone who would be added without any additional funding to the CAN contract.
I have a question. This is Hannah Tyler, the chair. You mentioned without increasing CAN funding. Are you saying
yes.
She moved into the CAN?
So yes, CAN would continue to receive the amount.
Okay.
I believe the CAN grant is about $140,000.
Correct.
For this current year. Last year, about $75,000 of that funding was used. Each CAN client can request up to $10,000 in contracted services throughout the year. And so it would seem likely that this client could be added to the contract without unduly, compromising or reducing the ability of the current CAN clients to access their services.
Right.
Since CAN really had, you know, almost over $60,000 that was not spent last year, and the most that any one client can request is $10,000 in services.
Chris, this is Kathy Morgan.
Yes.
What is the mode of communication for this client?
So this client actually is able to, she does not sign. She, with amplification, she is able to hear well enough with her hearing aid.
Okay. Could I also suggest that perhaps she at some point is assessed for the technology through the technology grant?
Yes. Let me defer to Margie. I think that she has gotten services through Access Through Technology early in the past.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me, Margie Santos?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Only because I had my call had dropped previously, so I had to call back in. But I did speak with her about the services. She's well aware of the Access Through Technology, and CAN. She would like to have to upgrade her devices. She has used the devices in the past, so she is looking to, get new devices. But as right now, she is well aware of the program and she.
Did we lose Margie?
I think we did.
Oh,
can you hear me?
Okay.
Can you hear me now, or did it get dropped again?
Oh, yes. Yep,
yes,
we can hear you.
Go ahead. Okay, nice. Okay. All right, yeah. I for some reason, my phone has been giving me issues. I apologize. I don't know what you heard. She does receive the access to technology devices, and she's looking to upgrade them.
Thank you.
Boy, stop the call.
Okay. So, would someone make a motion to, if someone is interested, I think a motion to add LB to the CAN contract would be in order.
This is Kathy Morgan.
We add LB to the CAN contract. Need a second.
This is Lisa. Yep.
Do you have a second?
Go ahead, Lisa. Okay, so can we vote? All in favor?
Is Lisa the second? Motion needs to be seconded first.
Lisa, I apologize. Yes, I do have a question. This is Lisa. I'm having a little bit of confusion on who LB is.
Oh, so LB is do we want to identify these clients by name? I'm sorry, I was using the...
This is Brian. No,
yeah,
we do
not. No.
We do not.
No.
Okay.
It's on public record, so it's available to anybody who wants to ask for it.
Right. So LB is a longtime client with deaf blindness who had attended the Connecticut Institute for the Blind as a, she was identified as a person with legal blindness in her childhood, and had attended the school, the residential school, Connecticut Institute for the Blind. And developed hearing loss in adolescence, I believe, was on the registry of clients with deaf blindness, but moved out of state for more than 20 years and returned to Connecticut about in the last 5 years. She has never has enough remaining hearing that she is able to rely on amplification.
Okay, this is the chair. Lisa, did that answer your question?
LB. I mean, I just, why are we, not saying their name, I guess? I mean, I think it should be, hopefully they can be more detailed in the next report.
Because we don't, this is Al, we don't mention their names because this is a public record and we don't have their permission to mention their names.
Oh, I understand. Okay. Okay.
For privacy, of course. This is the chair, so may we move on, make a motion?
We have a motion on the floor. It needs to be seconded before we can proceed
and
to
second?
A vote.
Second.
Kathy Morgan.
Okay, so we may vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, Tara.
Aye.
Heidi and Air has a question. Go ahead, Heather.
Yep. Hi there. So, Lisa, just to describe in brief, we almost never know the full name of the individual because of confidentiality issues. We just read initials. LB is their first and last initial, and that's very common when we're voting for different supportive services for these people. Now, Lisa wants to say something. Thank you, Heidi. This is Lisa. I understand that. That's great. I mean, I kind of understand their connection to CAN. It's a communication access issue. I was wondering about more of their communication skills and the SSP skills. So I was just thinking you guys should investigate that a little bit more.
Hi, Dave.
Got it.
This is Brian. That question came in the middle of a vote, and I'm wanting to know the outcome of the vote so that Lisa can capture it for the minute. Was there anyone who opposed? Is there anyone who abstained?
Eric Kringle has his hand up.
Lisa is opposed. Lisa.
Okay,
I have a point of clarification to Eric Kringle. I have a point of clarification. Go ahead, Heather. Eric Kringle.
Okay.
Point of clarification.
Hi there. I just wanted to clarify something about the proceedings. Just for communication in terms of assessment, when we accept someone into Canton, we can't refer anyone. I just wanted to just make a point of clarification. So if an individual is referred to Canton, how are they assessed in terms of communication? And then Lisa is saying thank you for that clarification.
Person knows Sue has a comment too, she wants to add.
Okay, this is Brian. Please, can we hold the comments until we close the vote? There was an active vote called by the chair, and people were voting, and you need to finish the vote. And then certainly the chair can call upon anybody to make comments, but right now we must close the vote. I had asked if anyone opposed. And I am told there were two people who opposed. Is that correct? We have two people who opposed.
Eric Kringle and Lisa Flaherty Vaughn both opposed.
Okay. Did anyone abstain? Okay. So now what we need to assert is whether or not the motion passed. We had, I believe, 10 voting members, which means 8 were for. I just want to be sure that we have it correct. Can those who say they voted yes please acknowledge so that I can do an actual count and be sure that we have a motion that passed?
Brian, this is Al. I suggest that you take a roll call if you want to do that, to avoid confusion. Otherwise, you're just going to have a bunch of people, you know, speaking up, and you're not going to know who's who. So if you want to do it in an orderly fashion, I suggest a roll call.
Alan, that is an excellent suggestion, and thank you for that. Okay, bear with me one second. I need to just call the roster back up on my screen. I'm only going to call voting members. Tara?
Yes.
Yes, I.
Okay, so Tara is a yes. So bear with me one second. I'm sorry, this is going to... Barbara Clunan.
Yes.
Okay. Lisa Flaherty Vaughn.
Opposed.
Okay. Eric Kringle.
Hello.
Okay.
Go ahead, Kim.
Sandra Miles.
Yes, aye.
Okay. Kathy Morgan.
Yes.
Karen Olson.
Yes.
Jesse Stanley.
Heather, can you take over for me?
We're not seeing Jesse on the screen.
Okay.
In support.
Yes. Al Sylvester.
Aye.
Hannah Tyler.
Aye.
And I believe that is all the voting members. So the motion carries, let's see, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We have 8 yeses, we have 2 noes. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So we may move on to meeting dates for 2021. And I believe the proposed dates are here on the sheet. That would be January 26th. Then we have April 27th. Third quarter is July 27th. And then, no, let's see, October 26-21. Those will be the next meeting dates. Pardon?
Move adoption.
Second.
Barbara.
Okay, and we, in favor? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Or do we do a roll call?
Aye.
Sandy,
it's up to the chair. This is Al. It's up to the chair to decide whether a vote is affirmative, unless it's close. You don't have to have a roll call unless somebody calls for it.
I see. Okay. I would say if all those dates are fine with everyone, they are set.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, is anyone voting in opposition of the meeting date? Okay, the motion passed unanimously then. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. And the next thing, report from BESBE Director, that would be Brian Sigmund.
Thank you. Andrew Norton, if he's still on the call, when I finish, he probably has a couple things he can also provide. But I'm going to start by just saying that with October 15th is Blind Americans Equality Day. In case you had not seen it, our commissioner did issue out a statement that also included links to 4 success stories of individuals who are clients of our bureau, of our agency, that are successfully employed. So if you hadn't seen it, I just wanted to point out that that had gone out. I also want to acknowledge Eileen Akers from the advisory board for persons who are blind or visually impaired for taking the lead on organizing activities that the advisory board organized, including the event that occurred at the Tobacco Museum in Windsor. And there's also a Facebook page that was hosted through Chris Radio highlighting some of the activities around Blind American Equality Day. In our adult services program, the ever-popular large print calendar has proceeded, and we are in the process of sending that calendar out. It goes to approximately 1,000 clients, so it is a significantly large distribution. If anybody has not received a calendar and you are hoping to get one, you can certainly email Lisa Tangway. You all have Lisa's email, so she sends out this information to all of you. Program staff are working on a series of instructional videos, which we hope to post on our website in the coming months, to assist folks and their family members who want some how-to guides on, for instance, how to use a liquid level indicator so that they would be able to hear this lesson without having to wait for necessarily a staff person to come into their home to do it. In our business enterprises program, unfortunately, this program has been impacted very hard because of COVID-19. Many of the buildings in government locations where they have cafeterias or sandwich shops are currently closed